Such approval is essential to avoid a disruption in crude supply for our Nikiski refinery after the current one-year contract expires on May 30th. Continued long-term operation of the Nikiski refinery requires a long-term crude supply at competitive prices. We believe legislative approval of this long-term contract with Chevron would be consistent with contracts the state has already made with the other in-state refineries. Now, I would like to mention briefly Chevron's long historic position in the petroleum industry in the state and our role in serving the refined product needs for the citizens of Alaska in both the urban as well as the bush areas. Chevron was the first company to market petroleum products in Alaska starting in 1889 and has served Alaska continuously since that time. We are the only statewide marketer and are the sole supplier of petroleum products in 14 communities. Chevron supplies about 27,000 barrels a day, or some 36% of the light products used in the state. In addition, Chevron operates the only finished product tanker based in Alaska, the Alaska Standard, which is dedicated to serving Alaskans in remote areas. In addition to this tanker, we have extensive and expensive barging operations in the Bristol Bay, Bering Sea, and Southeast Alaska areas. Chevron built the first modern refinery in Alaska, which started operating in 1963. In addition to light products, we have historically made about 70% of the state's requirement for asphalt at Nikiski. In 1983, we supplied 100% of this requirement as the other supplier has withdrawn from selling asphalt in Alaska. Chevron has approximately 190 employees in Alaska directly associated with our various operations. In addition, we do business with about 190 independent retail dealers who employ 800 people and 69 jobbers and agents who employ over 300 people. In total, Chevron's involvement in the petroleum industry in Alaska results in the direct and indirect employment of almost 1,300 people. The state has about 197,000 barrels a day of royalty oil from the North Slope, including Kupar. Of this volume, about 81,000 barrels per day is committed to in-state refiners under long-term contracts, and a balance of about 110,000 barrels per day has been left with the producers who are exporting the oil to the lower 48 states. The bulk of the volume being exported is going through the Panama Canal to the Gulf Coast area for supplying products in that area, and the state is in effect paying the transportation costs from Alaska to the Gulf Coast through lower realizations from the producers. None of the three largest producers exporting royalty oil return products to Alaska for use by the residents in Alaska. In contrast, Chevron brings over 12,000 barrels a day of products to Alaska from our California refineries to supplement the products made at our Nikiski refinery. One of the products we bring to Alaska is aviation gasoline, of which Chevron supplies about 80% of the state's total requirement. The state has the alternative of, one, leaving 18,000 barrels a day of royalty oil with the producers for exporting to the lower 48 to make products in the Gulf Coast area, or two, selling this volume of royalty oil to Chevron under a long-term contract at a higher price than the state will receive from the producers. Our contract will provide that we refine the oil in state at our Nikiski refinery and continue to supply the product needs of the consumers in Alaska, including diesel, heating fuel, jet fuels, and asphalt. I do not believe anyone can argue that such use of the royalty oil is not in the best interest of the state and its citizens. In closing, we sincerely hope that the legislature will determine it is in the best interest of the state and its citizens to approve a long-term contract with Chevron, a company that has historically done business in Alaska and has sizable investments in the state. We would like to continue our major involvement in serving Alaska. I'll be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Just one one brief question, which I also asked the previous speaker. Do you have any particular plans for dealing with the problem of the high oil prices out in the bush in relation to your in-state processing?
Well, we continually deal with that problem because it's, as you I'm sure know, it's presented to us all the time. It is under continuous analysis. We have done everything we can to keep those prices as low as they can be. They are high principally because of distribution and handling costs. We seek to find the lowest cost barging operations that we can make arrangements with. We don't do our own barging out there. We sign contracts, long-term contracts, at the best price we can find.
I guess I was just thinking, as a retailer, you might have some particular ideas about what might be done in the future, but if I understand your answer correctly, basically you feel that you're subject to the prices of transportation and there isn't much else to be said about the matter. Is that correct?
That's the major problem with the high prices in that area, that's for sure. And I'd like to assure you we continually are looking at them.
Thank you.
Other questions, Mr. Woodwild?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you view your contract as a two-year contract? Mr. Duren said he views theirs as a six-year contract. Do you look at yours as a two-year contract?
Not precisely. We look at it as a long-term contract with a price reopener. We would hope that if the price were reopened, that we would reach agreement on a new price. It's some of each, I guess, is about the best way I could answer that particular question.
The Chevron engage in price discrimination competition, such as where there's a sorrow competitor charging a lower price where there is no competitor. That was alleged, I believe, in a study that was done. Price discrimination.
No, there's no price discrimination. We obviously don't practice price discrimination.
So you wouldn't have any objection then that there was some kind of prohibition in prohibiting price discrimination as a condition of the contract?
I'm not sure what you mean by that sort of thing.
We don't practice
price discrimination to start with.
If I recall, there was a study that was passed out, and I think it was during the members might recall during the last session, there was a story and a study regarding the price of product in competitors, commenting on the differences between those where there was competition and where there was no competition. It seems to indicate that there might be something there. I just wonder if they're doing it, they shouldn't check. Making that explicit as a condition. Does Chevron use California Plus pricing as a cost plus pricing in the U.S. steel basing point system, California Plus or Richmond Plus pricing for products in Alaska?
We do in Western Alaska.
In other words, then, even though you're refining it here, you're charging, your costs include phantom freight for crude to Richmond.
No, we don't refine it here. The product that goes to Western Alaska comes from Richmond, California, as a matter of fact.
You're not putting any product in from your refinery in Western Alaska?
Not from Nikiski.
If you get this oil, will you be able to?
No, the refinery is running that volume now. It's cheaper to move product in a large tanker from Richmond to Dutch Harbor than any other way, really.
Does Chevron make cost data available? Have you made cost data available to the committee as to what it costs to refine?
No.
Mr. Chairman, isn't Chevron and any distributor where there's only one distribution outlet, aren't you subject to APUC regulation as a public utility? Wouldn't you have to provide your cost data to the APUC under the existing statutes of the state of Alaska?
No.
How many jobs do you think this would create if House approved, body approved, sale of the soil? Would it create any additional jobs?
No, I don't think so.
percentage of that crude would be produced in the product consumed in Alaska. For example, 40% of the crude be produced in the gasoline and related products consumed here, and then 60% shipped out, or what would the percentage
be? If I remember the numbers right, it's about 35 would result in products here, and the rest of it goes to California for further refining.
I think that Chevron owns a fair, gets a fair rate of return for what it's, the refinery get a fair, reasonable rate of return if you got this oil at this price?
If that is all dependent on petroleum product prices are doing. Right now in the U.S. market, I don't think anybody's making any money.
Well, I guess maybe I should rephrase the question. Would you be satisfied with a so-called fair rate of return? Say, we have in the state of Alaska public utilities commission, I believe it's charged by law with regulated prices on competitive push communities. I think you're in the statute. I'm surprised they haven't been doing it. If they are carrying out their mandate, it would be fairly easy to ensure a fair rate of return by carrying refining right over as a condition of contract against the public utilities.
We don't care to operate in a regulated industry, for example, Ben Dallas.
Clarify some of this interchange for my own knowledge here. On the issue of where the oil comes from and to which markets it is distributed, what would be the relative cost or benefit attached to reversing the procedure? I mean, if some of your imported oil went into Anchorage, imported from California, went into Anchorage, and some of your locally produced oil went out to the bush, what would be the impact of that kind of a change? In other words, could prices be balanced more around the state in that way?
No, you'd have higher costs. That's a different situation, and let me see if I can clarify it. In the case of Western Alaska, the way we price in Western Alaska is we take the price of products in the Richmond market, which is a competitive market, and we attach costs to get them to whatever location they have to get to. That's the price that is the wholesale price for which we sell, not to a consumer, but to a dealer or whoever's there. In the case of a market like Anchorage, you have the choice where there's a lot of competition of meeting the competition or losing volume. We in the last year have chosen to meet competition from other suppliers, and the people in Anchorage have benefited from that. There's no question the competition lowers prices for a certain period of time. No one's going to stay in a market, however, where they lose money indefinitely in the long term. They'll shake out. So there are short-term advantages in a larger market. On the other hand, if you look at the way we are now pricing in Western Alaska, what we're doing there is giving the advantage of the competition in the San Francisco Bay Area market to the people in Western Alaska. Now, I'm not sure which way it would come out better. There's competition in both those markets, and it varies over time. It's more at one time and one, more at one time in the other. But you still got these enormous transportation and distribution costs in Western Alaska, where, in particular, in the ice locked areas, you've got to have these huge inventories that are held for long periods of time and with a very high capital cost. There's nothing to do about that, really. There's no solution to that problem.
Thank you. It's something new to me and quite interesting to think that possibly if the oil going to Western Alaska is a relatively small percentage as compared with the oil used in Anchorage, and if some oil could be brought into Anchorage with a lower base price and also a lower transportation cost, whereas some of that oil that maybe is cheaper to produce for you could be moved out to the west. Do you play with these combinations a lot to see what's in the best interest of
We always have. We're interested in having the lowest distribution cost because we don't have barges of our own. We make a contract with a barge operator, and whatever he charges us, that's the cost. We don't put a 15% markup on barge costs, for example. It's passed on directly. And we are always interested in having the price be as low as it can be. There's no advantage to us to having a price higher than it needs to be for distribution reasons.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is Chevron, I believe, the only asphalt producer in the state today?
That became so in 1983, yes.
Are you able to produce statewide requirements to the Kiska refinery?
Yes.
We produce. You don't have to import any asphalt.
Well, let me clarify that. The way we make asphalt in the Kiska, we take the bottom part of the barrel that's produced at Nikiski, and then we have to bring in a component from California because the asphalt quality isn't sufficient made straight from North Slope the way we make it. So we have to bring in this other material that's very hard and blend it together at Nikiski, and that's how you produce asphalt here.
I've got a couple of follow-up questions. Sure. You introduced the idea of competition, which I certainly agree with. Tesoro competes with Chevron Anchorage's principal competitor, right? How about Western Alaska?
No one is in Western Alaska except us. Western Alaska, in effect, is getting the translation of competition with many companies in California, the way it works out.
Who's the price leader in Sort of following you, there's always a traditional price leader. Sort of following you, or you following?
I don't think that's constant with time. And there are more than just Tesoro and Chevron in Anchorage, of course.
But many of them are in fact buying retail product to distribute to your refineries.
Not gas. If you look at the product that the consumer on the street sees the most is gasoline. All of our gasoline, all of it except the unleaded premium grade, comes from Tesoro. The gasoline that we sell.
The Chevron sells.
Yes.
So you're really, you and Tesoro together are the primary source for all the different fuel stations, mobile, and so on.
No, we're not. Tesoro is. We don't produce any gasoline in this state. We bring some in, the unleaded premium grade, because it can't be made here.
Are you bringing any product into the Anchorage area now from California? What products?
Just jet fuel at the present time. I believe that's right anyway.
Soro sell jet fuel. Manufacture that.
Sure.
Yes. Let's see, if you're bringing stuff in from Richmond, your competition with them, they would have Phantom Freight, right? So they're going to Kiski. Their pricing is based on shipping the crude, which is that you are. Price, so they're the ones who have the Phantom Freight.
I don't know what you mean by Phantom Freight, sort of a derogatory sort of thing, I think.
Establishing cost structure.
Well, there are other factors in that equation. One, you have MAPCO, who of course is competing in the market. The market in jet fuel in the state is very competitive. You have Chevron, who can make jet fuel in a large complex refinery in Richmond and get it up here, even with the transportation at costs that are not too different than you can have producing it in state. There are many things that go into the economics of producing any product and getting it in any particular market. It's not really super straightforward stuff.
Final question. Are you familiar with the suit brought by the mayor stressed apparently retail price of petroleum product next to the refinery was more expensive than Anchorage, sort of suggested that the pricing structure was based on shipments to Anchorage and then distribution back. Do you think that such a situation exists with prices in the Kenai Beach in the past higher than they were in Anchorage, even though the stuff is refined right there?
That's certainly possible, and I'm sure it's true at times. It might be true right now. Let me say a couple things about it. You'll realize that suit's been withdrawn. Secondly, we do, in Chevron's case, we move gasoline from the Kiski through pipeline, through, it turns that could be DeSoro's pipeline system to Anchorage, where we blend in our additives. Then we put it in a truck and take it to Kenai. The dealers in Kenai tend to be very small. Their volumes are not very large, so their margins tend to be larger than they might be in an Anchorage market. That's not a part of the price we control at all. The dealer sets his own margin. We have nothing to say about that. Those are the reasons that prices in Kenai are higher than they are in Anchorage. These things have explanations.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
That essentially concludes our presentation for today. I think there's been a significant amount of work between the administration, commission, and other people. Myself, Representative Cowdery, Speaker Hayes, and other legislators through the interim working to get us to this point. We appreciate your patience and your efforts in that, along with that of the Chevron and DeSoro. We will have these back up for the House Resources Committee on Thursday. Representative Gilman?
Thank you.
Senator Gilman?
Yes, you're right, based on the last conversation that Representative Lindauer brought up, I think the record should show that technically that is the mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and not the mayor of Kenai. There are some differences of opinion, and I wouldn't like to see that the wrong person was given credit for that particular suit.
The suit was filed by the
mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, not the Kenai mayor. There is a difference.
Thank you, Senator Gilman. Nothing else, we'll see you meeting.
John, you're going to leave here and we're going to do...
Yeah, take it down.